we really try to provide eyes and ears, a view into the world of investing.
We are back. This is Future Proof, and I am Bill Sheridan. Welcome back. Glad you're here. Another great show for you this week, and we are going to get to it here in just a second. First, a reminder, this week's show, as always, made possible by our preferred providers. We actually like to think of these folks as partners. As I tell you every week, these are the organizations, the relationships, the partnerships that allow us, the MACPA, to do a lot of the great stuff that we do for our members and our profession, including this podcast. But these partners, they do way more than that, right? They are doing things that we believe can help you all become more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And help is the key word there. They truly, truly do want to help. So please reach out to them, find out more about what they can do for you. You'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's macpa.org. This week, an old friend on the show, Jack Soselsky, is with us this week. Who, you're saying? Not for long. Longtime MACPA member, Jack is. I haven't spoken with him in a long time, so it was great to catch up with him again. But he was quoted in a recent Wall Street Journal article, so we wanted to touch base with him on that and get his insights on the topic in question, which is this. The article is titled, "Former Inspectors of Public Company Audits Say Process Needs Retooling." It was written by Mark Maurer, and it starts like this. It reads, quote, "The process to inspect the audits of U.S. public companies needs an upgrade, according to some of the people who should know best, former inspectors who did the work over the last two decades. Former inspectors of the U.S. audit watchdog say inspections are a useful tool for detecting potential deficiencies in audits of public companies, but that public reports on the process are limited in scope, lack details, and not released in a timely fashion. More than two dozen former inspectors were part of a study that concluded that the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board produces sanitized public inspection reports and doesn't provide adequate training for its inspection staff. The inspector's experience spans the years 2004 to 2021, meaning their experience runs up until current PCAOB Chair Erica Williams took the helm in January 2022. Quote, what's available to the public is not really presenting a complete view of firm deficiencies, said Kim Westerman, a professor of accounting at California Polytechnic State University at San Luis Obispo, who co-wrote the paper with Elder Maximoff, an associate professor of accounting at Arizona State University. That's the biggest problem, end quote. And all of this comes in the midst of yet more bad news about the quality of public company audits. Back in July of 2023, the Journal of Accountancy and a host of other public news outlets outlined the results of a PCAOB staff report that found about 61% of the 710 audits the PCAOB reviewed in 2022 to have one or more Part 1A or Part 1B deficiencies. And that's up from 55% in 2021 and 44% in 2020. PCAOB Chair Erica Williams called the findings absolutely unacceptable and added, quote, audit firms must make changes to turn things around and live up to their responsibility to investors. The PCAOB will continue demanding firms do better, conducting transparent inspections, and bringing strong enforcement actions where appropriate. We are also asking audit committees to hold firms accountable by posing tough questions to their auditors on behalf of investors, end quote. So my guest, Jack Soselsky, he's quoted a little later in that Wall Street Journal article in a passage that reads, quote, investors aren't able to determine how well the inspection went or review how the PCAOB measures audit quality despite reading the inspection reports, said Jack Soselsky, owner of investment research firm RG Associates and a member of the PCAOB's investor advisory group. Quote, how does this hurt investors? Soselsky said, we don't know if we're hurt or not. We just have to hope that the audit went all right and that the inspection went all right. And then we could find out later that it didn't, end quote. So, I mean, all that got me thinking that it's time that we spoke with Jack Soselsky again. Good guy, smart guy, knows a lot, certainly, about a really timely topic that impacts a lot of folks throughout the profession and the investment world right now. Jack and I spoke recently about the PCAOB's Investor Advisory Group, what it is, what it does, along with some of the biggest issues related to auditing that investors are concerned about today. Also, his thoughts about the issues presented in the journal's article and what he thinks could or should be done to better help investors. Great conversation this week. Timely, too. I think Jack's term on the Investor Advisory Group is up before the end of 2023. So I'm glad we had this opportunity to sit and talk about this stuff. Here is my conversation with Jack Soselsky. Jack, thanks so much for being here today. How long have you been a member of the Investor Advisory Group?
2 years. My term comes to an end in December, I think.
In December. Okay. So a two-year term pretty much for everybody there? Or
Yeah. 2 years. Some people have three. So that they don't, but we started up all at the same time and they want to have some continuity. Several people have a 3 year terms, about half and half, I think.
How long has the group been around?
2 years.
Yeah, and so
it was around before. It's been around since the inception. It got disbanded under the prior board and reestablished with the current board.
Okay.
So I wasn't around for the first iteration.
Gotcha. So tell me a little bit about what the group does. What are you guys tasked with?
Yeah, well, our primary goal is to advise the board on matters that concern investors as relates to the auditing profession. And we do that, I say primarily, we meet with the board. We met with them three times this year. I think we only met with them twice in the first year that we were under, that we were reestablished. It's COVID. And I think we only met twice by Zoom. It may have only been once. I can't go back that far, but I'm pretty sure it was twice. But in any case, we meet with them. We, offer our views at open meetings to the board. We present issues to the board as a presentation. But I think our primary means of communicating a position to the board that's effective, most effective, is our comment letters to the board on their proposals. It's not like we come up with 14 ideas for proposals. I think we have had some influence on some of the things proposed, but we have a written record of what our view was, and it's reached by consensus, and it's there, it's established, and it provides some institutional memory so that we can see if our views are consistent over time and provide useful input to the board. Because really, we're their eyes and ears to the investment world. They they don't have investor representation on the board per se, which I find kind of ironic, since they're supposed to be an investor protection.
Right.
I wouldn't say, I don't even think investor protection is the right phrase, investor advocate. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be doing something for us that we can't do ourselves, and we don't have anybody there on the board to to make that happen as maybe as efficaciously as we should.
Yeah.
So that's what our role does. Our role is we really try to provide eyes and ears, a view into the world of investing to the
the comments or views that the group is presenting to the board, you said kind of reached by consensus. So does that mean that you, the investor advisory group, are meeting on your own to?
Well, we will canvas views to our constituents when we have them. I mean, mm-hmm. some of our, we have a pretty well, I'd say, you have to be careful when you use the word, but we have a pretty diversified group of investors. I mean, there's not one single school of investing. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about the accounting profession, I think of it as pretty much a monolith. Yeah. You have the big firms and you have the small firms. But generally, I think they pretty much agree on a lot of the issues that face the profession.
Okay.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Whereas investors, you know, you got some that are quants, you got some that are value, you got some that are ESG, and, you know, it's a mixed bag. So we have representatives on the IAG of, I think, a pretty diverse group of investors. And when I say we reach consensus, the views of those groups are reflected through the views of the members. I can tell you that I'm just by myself, so I don't reach out to a ton of investors. I reach out to investors whenever I can about the issues that we're on, but I don't always... not every letter gets that in there. When I say consensus, it's mostly by our group's consensus. Mm-hmm. And if others are reaching out within their firms, I think they are. I think they, you know, rely on the expertise that's within their group. Some of them are pretty big firms, and they will, you know, reflect that too.
Good to know. The board itself, pretty receptive to the things that you guys are bringing to their attention. What's that relationship like?
It's not a real close relationship. We don't work side by side with them. We meet with them. Like I said, we've met with them 3 times this year. They appreciate the work we do. Mm-hmm. We make our comments known. But it's not like they'll say, give me 3 of your best ideas for improving regulation.
Right.
And I wouldn't expect them to work that way. But I'm still waiting for a lot of the comments that we've made. I mean, I think that's a good question. And I don't have a definitive answer yet, because mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff that we've opined on has not yet come to be final standards. And, you know, I would like to see some of the DNA of our letters appear in those standards. And that's mm-hmm. how I'll tell. But so far, I would say the ones that we've seen that actually have been issued, they weren't ones that we really, you know, had a lot of novel things to say. So mm-hmm. it remains to be seen.
Well, so what are some of the biggest issues that, you know, related to auditing that investors are concerned about today? What are some of the things you'd like to see the board kind of take action on?
Well, you know, it's a perennial answer, I guess, and I don't want to sound like a drone, but, you know, audit quality is always a concern. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a bigger concern now, not because we've seen, you know, audit failure of the week or anything like that, but it's the economy, and the rise in interest rates has injected a lot of uncertainty into the economy. When are we going to head into recession? We're not going to head into recession, but, you know, not everybody's doing that well, but then earnings come out and they're great. So, you know, when we finally do, at some point there's going to be, I think, chickens coming home to roost in the economy. Somebody's going to slip on a banana peel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll have a recession. And that's when usually you find companies, you find out who's been swimming naked when the tide goes out. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you'll find out that there have been some shoddy audits, maybe. We had a taste of that in the first quarter when everybody was really scared about the banks. And I'm not going to get into specifics, but, you know, I think there were some, questions being asked about some of the audits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, audit quality is a perennial concern, and that's what the PCAAB is for, right?
Right, right. And we mentioned the Wall Street Journal recently published an article. Yeah. You were quoted in that article, by the way, claimed that some former inspectors, PCAOB inspectors, say that the current inspection process is, I think the word the article used was sanitized. It needs an upgrade, maybe doesn't provide investors with all the information they need. What's your take on all that?
First of all, that paper, I'd recommend to any of your listeners to look up that paper, and you know, we can find you a link or to it later.
We'll include a link in the show notes. Yeah.
Okay, good. I thought it was a very good paper. Not the typical academic kind of paper, a lot of regressions and formulas, but it was more like a Boston Consulting Group kind of effort where they're doing interviews and trying to come up with what the culture of the firm under question is. And there are a lot of good observations in there by talking to those people. And what I think impressed me the most was that I think the PCAOB has, how to put it, it has the right intentions, but it's had a hard time, I think, developing a culture that makes the employees grow and progress. You know, the lack of training on how to do an inspection was disconcerting. You know, there's got to be investment in the people. And I understand what they were trying to do when they hit the ground running 20 years ago. Let's get auditors. Auditors know what should be in the audit. Let's have them be inspectors and get these inspections done as fast as we can. So, and that doesn't seem like it's developed since then into, you know, the PCAOB way of, you know, a career path for inspectors. Mm-hmm. How to get, you know, if you're going to stay with the PCAOB, here's a career path for you. And, you know, that's out there in public accounting, but it seems like you just get dropped in here at the PCAOB. I don't think they've had a chance to grow a culture or invest in their employees, because there's always this changeover at the board level, where we seem to be, I don't want to say committed to that, but it seems like that's now the way it goes. And that's very disruptive to the internal workings of an organization. And I think it can be demoralizing too. So there was also another finding in there that I found, I guess, disconcerting. You know, they said that the PCAOB inspectors are always bringing knives to a gunfight because they're looking at audits the way that they did them when they came out of public accounting, and the firms invest, or they invest in new methods. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's more data driven, and maybe it's good and maybe it's not, but it seems like they're behind the curve compared to what they're trying to inspect. And, you know, maybe that was just based on not all of the findings. Maybe that was just a select few. But, you know, I think the PCAOB should spend some time with that report and do a little self-examination too.
Yeah, if they did, I mean, what do you think they'd find in there that might, I mean, what could or should be done, do you think, to better help investors from the PCAOB side?
You know, I don't have a window into how the internal workings of the PCAOB go. Mm-hmm. I on the outside, and I just, like I said, our primary work is evaluating the proposals. Mm-hmm. And you know, this was an inside, this was a view inside. So I don't know how completely global those findings were, but that's why I think the PCAOB should be taking a look at that and maybe doing some self-examination. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think a couple of things, what could be done to help investors? I don't think, and this goes to some of your other questions, you know, what's the PCAOB done in 20 years? Mm-hmm. I think they fulfilled the mission that they started out to do, but I'm not sure that they're completely equipped or completely up to the future tasks of what they have to do. Because I think, like I said, they don't have a chance to grow that culture, invest in the employees, develop institutional memory, because it's always a changeover at the top. Mm-hmm. And if there was a way to instill that, I think that they could do a better job that way by investing in their employees. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you take care of changeover at the top. I think that if you could make the PCAOB a parallel, truly independent oversight board, parallel to the SEC instead of reporting to the SEC, you know, that might help a lot. Right. On the other hand, it's still political appointees to the board, and that's always going to be challenging.
It's almost like, change, a bit of chaos, a bit mm-hmm. of uncertainties built into that model from a staffing point of view when those types of changes are happening so regularly.
And I would have to say, I think the board now it's refreshing to see this board in action. Mm-hmm. I think that for a few years before that, the PCAOB was pretty much in cold storage. And I can't imagine that was good for the employee base there.
Right.
But I think Chair Williams is moving the thing along and got the aircraft carrier pointing in the right direction. But then again, we have an election coming up in 12 months.
Right.
Who knows?
Who knows? Exactly.
So they still should try to instill a culture and investment in employees. And, you know, hopefully that stuff would stick no matter what.
Right.
No matter what the change at the top is. Now, what else could be done? I'm sorry.
No. Not at all. Please, go ahead.
You asked what could be done to help investors. You know, I don't think investors want to re-audit the numbers. They just want to be able to use them. Mm-hmm. And, but we have very little to assure us that the audit quality has been maintained. We have a little bit of information about the audit fees, the non-audit fees, the tax payment, the tax fees. We know a little bit about the auditors and how much of the audit was done by one office and how much was shipped out overseas. And I would say, while that's a big advance in giving us information, it's not the friendliest presentation. The inspection reports, you know, that's where the term sanitized was used, I believe, in that mm-hmm. report. Mm-hmm. And it's sanitized for sure. We'd love to know what the gap problems were. And, you know, I know that that's got to be, well, let's put it this way. That's something that I think investors would be very interested in, and not just for purposes of shorting stocks, which I think is probably the big reason that nobody wants that in there.
Right. Right.
Other things that would be useful, you know, and like I said, investors crave data. Just make all the data much more accessible. You can only get a report at a time, and it's still, like I said, heavily sanitized. the auditor search data is good, but it's very, you can get a big dump of it, but it's not the friendliest format. It's not granular enough. Mm-hmm. So yeah, give us some data. I don't think, and also, it's outside the PCAOB's jurisdiction, but you know, we don't get a choice in the auditor. We get to approve or disapprove the auditor. Mm-hmm. But it's like heaven and earth to get the auditor changed.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah.
Moving heaven and earth. Other things. Well, I have to mention the insurance model. Are you familiar with that?
No, tell me more.
Kind of a pie in the sky thing, but I think it's worth not letting it die. The idea, it's devised, as far as I know, by a professor at New York University. And I first heard about it in a PCAOB proposal. And it would be a complete radical overhaul of the way auditors are selected and audits are, you know, commissioned.
Okay.
You would get insurance companies to insure or warrant that financial statements are usable for investment purposes, that they're complete without, not that they're flawless, but that they're free of fraud. Let's put it that way. So you have an insurance company that makes this guarantee to investing public, and they contract with the company. They will charge a premium. The company is going to want to pay as little premium as possible. They have skin in the game. Mm-hmm. They are going to ensure that their controls are working and effective so that they have some leverage with the insurance company to keep the premium low. The insurance company has skin in the game because they don't want to be sued for making that guarantee, or they don't want to have to make good on that guarantee or warranty. Let's call it a warranty, because I think that's a fairer description.
Right.
So there's tension between the insured and the insurer. The insurer hires the auditor. The insurer is going to find the auditor who is most attuned to that industry, that company, mm-hmm. and most likely to do the job for them correctly so that they can make that warranty with some confidence. And the auditor is going to want to charge an ample amount to do the job well and make sure that they get hired again. Mm-hmm. They don't want an audit failure. So everybody's interests are aligned, and the public at large benefits because the financials should be pretty clean. Unfortunately, there's no way to instill this into the system we have right now. So it would take an act of Congress, which is not something that you can just order up on the internet.
Right.
But it's a great idea. And, you know, no matter how good the auditors do at what they do now, the way it's selected now, they always have this appearance problem. And it looks really bad once things erupt.
Yeah.
So I think by getting everybody on the same page, as far as their incentives for doing something and that tension between the contracting parties, it seems like it's the best of all worlds.
Yeah,
that's not how it's done. As
unlikely as it may be that something like that would take root, it might be that kind of thought process that we need going forward in order to ensure that everybody is treated equitably.
Yeah, I think if insurance companies were interested in it, I think that it would have a chance of moving, mm-hmm. but I don't think they are. But I'm not sure if you if you can insure against earthquakes and hurricanes, which you really can't control, why wouldn't you want to insure this, where you have some influence over the process?
That's
anyway. Right. But I'm not an insurance guy, so I don't know.
Right, right. But it's a new way of thinking about it, which is refreshing. I mean, what is the future of audit look like to you, Jack? I mean, where are we headed ultimately?
Yeah, I think I don't see it changing that much. I know that there's a lot of hand-wringing about smart people not going into accounting at the college level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't blame the... I think it's wrong to blame the rules or the profession's standards for that.
Right.
I think that there's, like that paper said, a lot of people go to work for the PCAOB because they want to do right by the profession. And there's some altruistic motivation that people have to get into this. And I think that's true at the college level, but I think maybe at the college level, I think there's been a lot more appealing things than there used to be. The internet was one thing. We had this problem, I think, in the late 90s. You know, there was the dot-com gold rush, and everybody wanted to go into finance or web design or something to do with the internet. Mm-hmm. And yeah, accounting was getting left behind again. And now there's so many... it's a different world, okay? There's a lot more appealing things. You might grow up playing video games, and now you might have an aptitude for accounting, but you decide to be a gamer. Mm-hmm. Professional gamer. I mean, I don't think it's just that it's a tough, it's a very tough profession. I think that our competition in terms of getting people involved in auditing is, you know, the law profession, because it's the closest thing to it. Mm-hmm. And you don't have the same kind of liability in the law profession as you do in the accounting profession. So I don't think the answer is to dilute standards or dilute education requirements. I think money solves a lot of things. You know, if you can give them a reason to take the risk on, mm-hmm. They'll do it. And they might, I think a lot of people, as far back as I can remember when I was in school, and they planned to, you know, get their experience and then try to parlay that into something else. Well, you know, I think you still have that mindset, but you might as well make it attractive to them for as long as you can by paying them up. And, you know, the auditing profession, like you said, what's the future? Hey, it's going to be the same as it's been, and we're going to have the same cycles of popularity and non-popularity. And hopefully we don't have the cycles of, flops.
Right. Right. Well, Jack, thanks so much for taking the time and offering up some of your insights and for your service. I know we're here in Maryland, really proud of you and thankful for what you're doing. So thanks for all that. And thanks for being here. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I really am happy that you reached out to me, Bill.
Great talk there with Jack Soselsky, a longtime MACPA member. He's the owner of investment research firm RG Associates and a member of the PCAOB's Investor Advisory Group. If you want to learn more, we've got links to the PCAOB's Investor Advisory Group, also to the Wall Street Journal article in question, as well as some other related and interesting reading and resources. That's all in our show notes. You'll find those on our blog at macpa.org/blog. And don't forget this week's show, made possible, again, by our preferred providers, our partners in this profession. They're doing things that we believe can help you all become more future-ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And you'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website, macpa.org. That's it, gang. Thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it. Have a great week. See you again soon. Take care.